when a crisis is actually going on, people hold it together and they actually don't have as many problems as they might even on a regular day. But then as the crisis goes longer, and then once the immediate danger is over, a lot of times that's when symptoms come up.
That was Dr. Sarah Martin of Texas Tech, Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Martin specializes in psychiatric illness and symptoms in people. Good afternoon, I'm Anthony Morneau. Today on Voice of the Public, Dr. Sarah Martin will be joining us to answer your questions as we discuss isolation and mental health during this pandemic on Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update, coming up after the news. Welcome to Voice of the Public. I'm Anthony Moreno. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and today we will turn our focus to the topic to learn how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health. We'll be getting to that in just a moment, but first, we want to bring you the latest news. Several dozen workers at a meat processing plant here in southern New Mexico have tested positive for coronavirus. State officials plan another round of testing at Stampede Meat in Sunland Park. The Illinois-based company says its processing facilities are cleaned and sanitized daily. The company says employees are screened and instructed to wear protection. That includes masks and face shields. New Mexico health officials said as of Thursday, the state had 6,500 cases, with officials raising concerns about young people without symptoms potentially spreading the virus. The Associated Press is reporting that children and teenagers currently make up about 13% of New Mexico's positive cases of COVID-19, four times higher than the national average. On Thursday in Doniani County, officials reported 40 new positive cases of COVID-19, which was the highest number of new positive cases for the state yesterday. In El Paso, health officials reported that there have been over 2,100 positive cases of COVID-19, along with 58 deaths. Out of the 119 people currently hospitalized, 65 patients are in ICU and 22 COVID-19 patients are on ventilators. Joining us for this hour is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Now, to join in our conversation this hour, to ask Dr. Martin a question, you can call 575-646-2212 or like our Facebook page and join in the conversation on social media. Dr. Sarah Martin's clinical expertise is in psychiatric illness and symptoms in people of all ages. Dr. Martin specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry and is an assistant professor and division chief of the Child and Adolescent Division at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso. Dr. Sarah Martin also served active duty in the U.S. Army, serving in the Army's Medical Corps, which included a deployment to Iraq. She also has expertise in the psychiatric care of the American soldier and has done work at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Dr. Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Now, if you have a question for Dr. Sarah Martin, you can call this number, 575-646-2212. That's 646-2212. Dr. Martin, I'd like to start off with many states beginning the process of reopening. Health officials have kept in place some stay-at-home orders to stop the spread of COVID-19. Can we start off by just talking about how social isolation may be impacting our mental health at this moment?
Yes. So whenever we're looking at something new, like this is a brand new thing, we've never had a pandemic that has closed down the country before. You know, the closest thing was 100 years ago. So what we do is we try to compare it to other situations that might be similar, and then sometimes even to animals. So, and when you're talking about children and adolescents, we always have to factor in that every experience they have is part of their development and either contributes to it positively or negatively. But the good news is that humans are very flexible. That's probably the reason that we have been able to create such a complicated society and a complicated civilization. They're very flexible to any challenges that come along. And children probably even more so. There hasn't been a similar situation where the entire population is as socially isolated as we are now. But there have been some studies on different situations that keep individual children isolated. And then also we look at adult studies when there aren't enough studies that have been done in children and adolescents. So in general, the strongest link between social isolation is probably with depression. So we should be on the lookout for any depressive symptoms in our kids, and if you're a teenager yourself, and your friends and yourself. That's probably the strongest link in the literature. That being said, times are so different now in terms of electronic and virtual communication. And so we really don't know how well FaceTime, for example, if you're talking to your kids, if you're talking to your friends just as often as you would have previously in real life on FaceTime or some other video app, we don't really know how much that compensates. But it probably does compensate to a certain extent.
If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update, our weekly call-in program we have on Friday afternoons. Today, we are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health, how isolation may be affecting us, and other possible scenarios that may be playing a role on our mental well-being. Joining us is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Martin, you brought up a number of things there. I kind of want to hear from you, though, about how this pandemic also may be impacting the mental well-being of young people right now. How is that possibly playing a role? Obviously, schools have closed down and remote learning is happening. People were not able to go through this graduation time of the year with the festivities. They were a little different this year, obviously. So how do you think this may be impacting young people?
I think that they are going to have to be practicing all their best flexibility skills, that's for sure. We don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next. So many things have been changing. So for people and kids that are, adults and kids who are able to accept change, even if it's coming rapidly, they're probably going to be the ones that do fine. The people that we're more worried about are the ones, some people are just naturally, temperamentally a little more rigid, and those are the ones that this is going to be really hard on. Let's say if you have a person who has fairly rigid thinking patterns, let's say their graduation is canceled, it's going to be much more disappointing, whereas another kid who is very flexible in their thinking will say, oh, well, we'll just have, the drive-by parties. Those are so cool. And they'll be able to make that switch really quick. And in general, young people are, the younger you are, the better you are at that kind of flexibility. So really the key to remaining happy and functional during this period is going to be remaining as flexible as possible and really putting more effort into looking on the bright side than you might normally do.
This is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. I'm Anthony Morneau. Good afternoon. If you would like to join in the conversation, we are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health. The number to call is 575-646-2212. That is 575-646-2212. You can also like our Facebook page and join in the conversation there. And we are also available at our website, krwg.org. Dr. Martin, I'd kind of like to hear a little bit about ripple effects of what we may be seeing. For a person, you mentioned depression earlier. For a person who has depression, what are some of the ripple effects of having depression that could impact our other parts of our health and well-being?
Depression is unfortunately related very closely with other health problems. In general, people who have depression are much more likely to report physical symptoms. So, you know, having getting depression treated when it first starts is going to be super important to everyone's overall health. Many, many different physical conditions are correlated with depression. Basically, saying if you are having depression, then you are much more likely to have medical problems, physical symptoms. Sometimes they're unexplained ones that could be related directly to the depression itself. But then it's also very common to have a worsening of medical problems when you do have a depression. So it's actually people think of the mind and the body as separate, but everything about the body affects the mind, and everything about the mind affects the body. And it's a very direct correlations. It's things that are very hard to study, but there's been a lot of research in this area, and it's very clear that if you maintain your mental health, you are more likely to be physically healthy as well. But then it's also vice versa. If you maintain your physical health, then your mental health is more likely to be good.
This is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. This afternoon, we are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health. The number to call to ask a question is 575-646-2212. Joining us this hour is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Martin's clinical expertise is in psychiatric illness and symptoms in people. We had an email come in with a question for you, Dr. Martin. This person said that their son is 43 years old and struggles with paranoid thinking after a suicide attempt. They say he isn't working and is suspicious of both therapy and medication. The pandemic has exacerbated his anxiety and fears. They say they are afraid he'll never want to go out again, even once restrictions are lifted. Is there something that they can do or say to help him find perspective and divert his focus from worst-case scenarios?
Well, the best thing you can do as a family member is maintain communication with the person. Trying to constantly tell them that their beliefs are false is usually very ineffective. So I would not recommend arguing directly with them about their fixed belief. And anybody who's ever had a friend or a family member with symptoms like that, they'll understand what I'm saying. It doesn't get you anywhere. So what I would recommend is maintaining a positive relationship with the person, and then every once in a while testing the waters in terms of getting the person back into treatment. Now, in most states, the laws concerning individuality, I guess, are very strong. And so it's very difficult to force someone to go into treatment. You cannot force someone into treatment until they are hurting themselves or hurting others. And a past suicide attempt is not necessarily enough. It has to be a more current situation. But if you are ever concerned about that the person is going to hurt somebody now or hurt themselves now, then all first responders are trained in how to deal with that situation. So you just, like any other emergency, you would call 911. But if it's a family member who is, you know, they have a lot of problems, but they don't want to get treatment, the best thing you can do is maintain that positive communication. And then hopefully they will at some point ask you for help, and then you can help them to find somebody that will address the situation.
And they're certainly not alone if they're treating a family member or helping a family member with a mental health disorder. According to the New Mexico Department of Health, at least 8.4 million people in the U.S. provide care to an adult with a mental or emotional health issue. In New Mexico, suicide has been a major concern for a lot of folks. From 2008 to 2018 in New Mexico, suicide rates were over 50% higher than the U.S. rate. New Mexico suicide rates increased over 28% from 2009 to 2017. Such a big concern in New Mexico, in our part of the region. Dr. Martin, what are some things that people really need to pay attention to with signs of suicide?
So the most important thing is if somebody expresses a suicidal thought, that you help them to get help. That is a situation where you can help someone or can get them help even if they don't particularly want it. Anytime the word suicide is mentioned, we should be taken seriously, and you should call 911 so that they can get evaluated. Also, access to guns. The vast majority of suicides are with a gun. So if you know a person that is depressed, tell them that you'll keep their guns for them until they feel better. Do anything you can to talk them out of having those guns right there on hand in their house. That's one of the most important things. Another thing that's really important but much more difficult to do is help people get treatment for their substance use disorders. Most suicides are associated with an addiction, either to alcohol or drugs. Alcohol is by far the most common, but then drugs are also a very serious problem that just changes the way you think. And it any kind of drugs or alcohol lower your inhibitions, and so you're more likely to do things that you wouldn't do when you were sober.
If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. Joining us is Dr. Sarah Martin. She is Child and Adolescent Division Chief at the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in El Paso. If you have a question for Dr. Martin, you can call this number, 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Or please ask your question on our Facebook page. We are now going to a caller who has a question. We are going to Ed. Ed is on hold. Ed, thanks for joining us for Voice of the Public. Do you have a question for Dr. Martin?
I'm a little bit wanted to call in and find out what can be done with a lot of families that have a member that is suffering from mental health. And in a lot of ways, the family, too, is in denial. They just assume that that this, too, shall pass. You know, what are some things that can be done for intervention, in particular during this time of isolation, where you have a lot of families that are pretty much crammed together and the possibility of domestic abuse?
Dr. Martin?
Oh, yes. That's a complicated question. It's a very, very important one. That's one thing that especially, anyone that works with families is very concerned about domestic violence increasing during this time. Because not only are people all together, but children and, well, everybody, because of the isolation, usually the way people get help is that, you know, the school calls and reports to Child Protective Services and then an investigation can be done. But this time where everyone's at home, it is a concerning time. So if anyone has suspicions, you know, you can call anonymously to Child Protective Services. And I'm not sure exactly what it's called in New Mexico, but sometimes it's called Family Protective Services. And they will do an investigation and leave you as the reporter out of it. So that's important to know. In terms of getting help right now, it is hard if people don't want to accept help. But if you could let them know that it's much, much, much easier to recover from any psychiatric syndrome, any symptom, if they're addressed right away. So the sooner you address them, the better. It's just like anything. It's just like diabetes, you know. If your sugar is only 110 most days, getting it down below 100 is going to be pretty easy. They can maybe just cut out a few hamburgers or something. But if you let it go until their sugar is 600, it's a serious medical problem, and they end up in the ICU, and they have a lifelong, very difficult course. So the sooner the better. Now, access to mental health services right now is pretty good because people are staying home. And so a lot of people are taking new patients right now, and they're doing it all virtually. So people can literally call into a psychiatrist's office from their home and have a video appointment. Definitely Texas Tech is open for that. The Child Guidance Center, I know, EHN in El Paso. I'm not as familiar with New Mexico services, but I'm pretty sure that everyone around the country is doing these direct access appointments now.
If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. This afternoon, we are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health. Do you have a question for Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso? If so, the number to call is 575-646-2212. Dr. Martin's clinical expertise is in psychiatric illness and symptoms, and Dr. Martin also specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry and is an assistant professor and division chief of the Child and Adolescent Division at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso. Once again, the number to call is 646-2212, or you can join in the conversation on our Facebook page. There's so many things happening right now, Dr. Martin, at once. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has made a major impact on the economy in our country, in our part of the region. I've noticed, according to data from the New Mexico Department of Health, the rate of unemployment is higher among U.S. adults who have a mental illness, almost 5.9% compared to those who don't. How does this play a role in impacting the stress level or mental well-being of people when they may be losing a job right now or be worried about possibly losing an income?
That is one of the biggest concerns. You know, it's interesting. Being a psychiatrist, I have all the, you know, I went to medical school, and so I understand, you know, we don't want all this infectious illness to kill so many people, so we want to stay home. But on the other hand, there are very few factors in a person, in an adult's life, that contribute to personal well-being as much as work does. I have seen so many patients where they're having some mild problems and they decide to stop working and they actually get worse. So if people are finding themselves unemployed, first of all, the worrying about getting unemployed is only going to make you feel worse. And so if we could stop, you know, if we as humans could stop worrying about the things that are out of our control, our mental health would probably, boom, you know, be improved by 25% just with that, maybe more. But if you find yourself unemployed, taking care of your mental health is going to be really important. And for certain people, it is part of their core identity, their job, their career. Mm. And for those people, it's going to be even more important to really take care of yourself. A lot of times for people who are already patients and find themselves unemployed or without some other large stressor in their life, all we have to do is increase the medication that they're already on. And sometimes that's only temporary, but those changes are important. It's important to keep on top of, too. You don't want to wait until you've been feeling horrible for 3 months before you call your doctor and say you feel horrible. You want to do it as soon as you can.
What are some of the things that we could do every day to make sure that we're staying good with our mental health and just doing right by ourselves as far as mm-hmm. our emotional well-being?
Probably one of the most important things that everybody can do during this time of isolation is find a way to connect, whether it's electronically, the phone, video, that sort of thing. That's going to be really important. Another thing that's going to be really important is getting outside. It's starting to get hot, so maybe, you know, get outside in the morning or the evening. But that time in the sun is very important to regulating your sleep cycle. So what I'm hearing from a lot of my patients is that they're staying inside all the time now. It's not that we have to stay inside. We're allowed to go outside, but we're out of our usual routine. So a kid, for example, a high school student, they get sunshine as they're driving to school. They get sunshine as they're going from the parking lot into the school. They probably see the sunshine in between every class. And that sunshine really is important for the biological clock of humans and for the maintenance of a good mood in humans. And probably in all animals that are daytime animals. Nighttime animals, of course, is probably the opposite. But we are definitely, humans are daytime animals. So there's a lot of research that shows we need to be outside. We need the fresh air. And there's evidence that it is related with fewer episodes of depression and even lowering blood pressure. Mm. So being outside is much more important. And if you're getting a little exercise while you're outside, that's even better. So I think a lot of people, because they're out of their regular routines, they have cut out all of those things in their life that are good for them as well. So we got to try to be creative and get that back into the schedule, even though our schedule is so different now.
We are definitely adapting and trying to be as creative as possible right now during this time. If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update, our weekly call-in program here on KRWG Public Media. This week, we're talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting our mental health. Have you thought about this lately, how your mental health is being impacted right now? Are you frustrated with being at home for longer than you usually are? Are you struggling with mental health? You can give us a call right now. Our guest is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Martin's clinical expertise is in psychiatric illness and symptoms and also specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry. Dr. Martin, there's so many things that we don't know right now with COVID-19. When we talked last time, you mentioned that when dealing with mental health, folks are usually pretty good right as soon as they face a crisis. You said that things really happen later down the road with mental well-being. Can you explain that?
Yes. The human brain, it must be naturally set up for a crisis, to hold it together during a crisis. When I was in the Army, when I was deployed to Iraq, we had one psychiatrist for 20,000 people. And then, you know, back home at Fort Knox, I had, 10 psychiatrists for 10,000 people. And so you can see that it's something about humans. They keep it together during a crisis so they can function, which, of course, in a life or death situation will help you to function and stay alive. And so really what we see is when it's a long-lasting crisis like this one is, we see the effects much later. Like, a lot of people are feeling okay right now, but then when it's all over and they relax a little bit, that's when they start to have symptoms. And that research, though, is done more on traumatic situations. So this one is a little bit different. But if, let's say, if you were, you know, a healthcare provider in New York City, it would be a very traumatic situation. Whereas for us out here, if you don't even work in the healthcare setting at all, and we're just kind of stuck at our homes, we don't know so much how that is going to affect us, but we are definitely seeing huge decreases of people coming in for acute treatment, both for medical treatment and for psychiatric treatment. Whereas the patients are already with us, they are showing up to all their appointments, so that's great, so we can take care of them. But people are putting off treatment, it appears, because we're not getting as many calls as we usually do for first-time appointments.
Oh. If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. We're discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting our mental health, maybe impacting our mental health. Joining us is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. The number to call to ask a question is 575-646-2212. We do have a caller on the line with a question. Dolly, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Do you have a question for Dr. Martin?
Actually, my name is Alanis Gonzalez. I'm a Doña Ana Communities United, a nonprofit organization here in Las Cruces. And we have two free program initiatives that are helping residents of Las Cruces to help combat isolation and loneliness. It's called Cruces Contigo. And it's just a service here that that connects residents with each other so that they can feel more supported in the community. And we know that many people have had to cut their social support lines. And so what we do, we partner up residents. That way we can text each other or call each other.
Okay.
And we also have a time back initiative. We know that times are tough right now with COVID, and money is not flowing as usual. So time bank members exchange services using time as currency.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, you know, if someone needs help, you know, with yard work, they don't have to pay for it. Someone can do yard work for you, and you can repay them, you know, by giving them an hour of your time by, you know, helping them budget their checkbook.
So can you tell us
anything like that?
Can you tell us how folks can find out more information about that?
Of course. You can go online to our website. It's called daku.org. It's daku.org. Or you can call one of our coordinators. The number is 915-314-0746.
Okay, so real quick before you go, how are you doing with everything right now?
Well, personally, it has been tough. I am going through my first pregnancy.
Mm.
So it's been very different. You know, you expect things to be able to go out, have a baby shower, have your husband go with you to doctor's appointments, but you know, I have my own support lines that help me.
Yeah.
And but you know, we're going through it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that information. We appreciate it. If you have a question for Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso, the number to call is 575-646-2212. You can also join in the conversation on our Facebook page. We did have a comment come in on our Facebook page, Dr. Martin, from Patty, who would like you to address the importance of social connections and support in preventing suicide. How can that play a role?
It's extremely important. And, you know, the line that or the service that was just presented right a couple of minutes ago, that sounds great because it connects people who might otherwise be very isolated. So the reason that social isolation is, of course, everything's theory, but the theory is that social isolation is associated with suicide. Because the way that a person thinks when they're getting depressed is they think only of the negative. So let's say that they are part of a family who, the rest of the family is not depressed and they're somewhat cheerful. So every time someone says something negative, one of their family members will say back to them, oh, what are you talking about? Like they'll say, oh my God, it's too hot today. And another person will say, oh, well, don't worry about that. We'll just turn the air conditioning on 2 more degrees colder. And so in that way, the person can be uplifted a little bit. So if somebody is socially isolated, though, first they have the feeling that, oh, my God, it's so hot. And then they'll think, oh, well, maybe I'll turn the air conditioning. And, well, oh, my gosh, that's going to be so expensive. I better not. I'll just be miserable. Oh, my gosh, I'm so miserable. And then they just start, you know, is life even worth living? So it's like a downward spiral. So if they have people around them, they just don't get as depressed. Because they are corrected in their thinking by those around them that care about them. But if they're alone or they intentionally cut other people off, then there's nothing to interrupt the downward spiral. So it is a very dangerous thing.
Who has a more higher rate for the potential of suicide? Is it men or women?
Men have much higher rates of suicide.
Why is that?
You know, there are a lot of different theories about that, depending on who you talk to. I don't know that they know for sure. One One very important factor, though, is that men are much more likely to own guns. They're much more likely to be familiar with guns and have access to guns. And so there are equal numbers of men and women, and maybe even women a little bit more, have suicidal thoughts. But completed suicides are much higher in men, much, much higher. So a lot of people think it has to do with the way people communicate. Maybe perhaps depending on the culture of your area and your family, you might not feel comfortable saying that you're depressed if you're a man, where most women maybe, and this is, you know, it really depends on the situation and the culture of the family and the community. They might not, women might feel more comfortable asking for help. And that's what we see in adult psychiatry clinics. We see more female patients than male patients. Even though most psychiatric disorders are equal between women and men, and depression is even higher in women than men.
Now, you mentioned firearms playing a role. According to data from the New Mexico Department of Health in 2017, 53% of those who died by suicide used a firearm. If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. I'm Anthony Moreno. Good afternoon. Today, we are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental well-being. With us is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Martin's clinical expertise is in psychiatric illness and symptoms in people of all ages. She specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry and also has expertise in the psychiatric care of the American soldier. Dr. Martin served active duty in the U.S. Army, serving in the Army's Medical Corps, which included a deployment to Iraq, and she has also done work at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. If you have a question, you can call 646-2212 and speak with Dr. Sarah Martin. Right now, we are going to another call. We have Jeff holding. Jeff, good afternoon. Do you have a question for Dr. Martin?
Yeah, a couple of them. First of all, Dr. Martin, do you know of any programs where undergoing psychotherapy gives college credits to the patient that could instead be called a student?
You know, I haven't heard of that. Now, something kind of on a related note that I have heard about is most colleges these days, if you are a student, you have access to their counseling center, and most colleges that are big at all do have a counseling center and do have it as part of your benefits of being a student. Like, you pay your tuition, so you have access to certain things. And so that is very, very common. Some bigger universities even have their own psychiatrists. Here in El Paso, UTEP, I know, has a counseling center, but they don't have their own dedicated psychiatrist. So they have a contract with Texas Tech where you get seen as a patient for a reduced fee at Texas Tech because you're a UTEP student. Now, there are people that are in advanced career. So let's say if you have a PhD in psychology or you already are a psychiatrist, then if you're doing a psychoanalytics training program, then the psychoanalysis is part of your training. But of course, that's way on down the line, not just for college credit. So I haven't heard of that.
But isn't there a big problem still that there's a lot of stigma and money cost to patients and their parents to go through psychotherapy?
And yes, that's true.
By calling them a student. And the second question is, are you familiar with Dr. M. Scott Peck, the late Dr. M. Scott Peck, the psychiatrist that writes books?
Yes. Yes. Well, And you know, there's a lot of authors like him, psychiatrists like him, and it can be very, very helpful, depending on the type of person, to buy books from these psychiatrists that are aimed at a person who's having symptoms. Another good book, kind of in the same vein that we always recommend to our patients, is called Feeling Good by John Burns. And it is a book that a person who's having either depression or anxiety can read, and you do the exercises, and you can get to feeling a lot better. Now, that's more for people who are having more mild symptoms. When people get to having more severe symptoms or, God forbid, suicidal thoughts, that's when they really need to let somebody help them and seek help.
Well, anyway, I was just thinking that because M. Scott Peck, for instance, and many others think that the person that does choose to stick with psychotherapy until they really spiritually grow, they're the most courageous people, the best people. So why?
Absolutely.
Why are they costed so much? Why aren't there scholarships for? This morning I thought up a major in college. You could call it the Bachelor of Responsible Advanced Spiritual Sequencing, which sequencing is sort of like growth, and at least get scholarships, and for really poor students, maybe even pay them, because there would be less hypocrisy in what M. Scott Peck is saying about how it's so great to go through psychotherapy and these are the best people. So why are they paid $50? They have to pay $50 an hour or more. I don't know how much it is, either the insurance company or the parents.
It is a big problem, because if you have an insurance that has a copay, even if you have a very good insurance, you might have a $30 copay. And when somebody's having significant symptoms, we recommend going to psychotherapy once a week. And so that does add up. Now, for anyone who qualifies for Medicaid, the good news is that there is no copay for Medicaid. Another group that has no copay are anybody who has TRICARE insurance. So, of course, that's the families of active duty members. Active duty military members, and they don't have any copays either. So some groups that we worry about a lot, though, of course, are people who make enough money so they don't qualify for Medicaid, but they don't have enough money to pay for psychotherapy. Sometimes they can. There are certain agencies in El Paso and all over, I'm sure there's Las Cruces ones too, that take patients on a sliding scale. Project Vita is one of the ones that takes patients on a sliding scale, and Child Guidance Center also takes a sliding scale. So a lot of people will get, a lot of agencies, nonprofits will apply for grants, and they're able to provide reduced fee services. But it takes, you know, a little bit of work to figure out who will take you. But don't give up. Anybody who wants psychotherapy, just keep on looking for a program.
Now, do you feel that over the last decade, the stigma around psychotherapy has changed, or at all?
Oh yeah, it's just during my career. So I graduated from medical school in 2002, and during this millennia, there has been a huge reduction in the stigma. Now that brings up another problem, though. Of course, as when the stigma has so reduced that we have many more patients than we can adequately treat a lot of times. So especially for child and adolescent psychiatrists, sometimes the waiting list is 6 months or more. Now, usually the county mental health organizations here in El Paso, is called Emergence Health Network, they have services where they can get people in right away. So depending on where you live, sometimes you do have that safety net, or they can get you in to see a therapist pretty quickly. But some of them there's more therapists than there are child psychiatrists. So usually that's the service you have to wait the longest for. Usually the county mental health centers are pretty good at getting people in quickly, but we have a lot of people who are seeking care.
If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. Our guest is Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. We are talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic may be impacting our mental health. Do you have a question for Dr. Martin? You can call 575-646-2212. Now, you brought up the issue of maybe not having enough people to provide mental health care for young people. Going back even further, are there even enough people studying to play that role as a professional?
Yes, that's one of the big problems. And that, some projects I'm working on currently are trying to expand that workforce. But it is a difficult thing. It's because people have the freedom to choose what kind of medicine they practice. So medical school slots are always full in the United States. So there are more people wanting to be doctors that enough people wanting to be doctors that all the medical schools are full. And then the problem becomes once you're graduating from medical school, everybody gets to pick their own specialty, which, you know, of course, that is the American principle that we hold most dear, you know, individuality and individual choice. But it brings a problem where the stigma affects not only patients, but it affects other medical professionals and medical students. And so a lot of people probably never do consider a career in psychiatry because of the stigma against psychiatry. A lot of people say, oh, well, they're not real doctors, you know, things like that. And that kind of stigma affects everyone, not just the patient. So we do have a problem starting in medical school. Now, the good news is that for the last few years, maybe the last 3 years, we have had more of our own medical school graduates here at Texas Tech going into psychiatry. So it is becoming more popular as stigma decreases in the general population. The stigma is also decreasing in the medical profession itself. And so that will help. But to be a child psychiatrist, it's 4 years of medical school, 4 years of psychiatry training, and then 2 more years of child psychiatry training. So you can see that it'll take a while for everything to catch up. And the state of Texas is supporting child psychiatry fellowships, and they are paying for an extra fellow for this year for us, for our program, so that's great.
Well, it's obviously, from what the data shows us, a very needed profession right now, especially and maybe even more as months go on. If you're just joining us, this is Voice of the Public Coronavirus Update. The number to call to ask Dr. Sarah Martin with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso a question is 575-646-2212. We still have time for a couple questions, so feel free to let us know. Do you have concerns about your mental health or others during this time, during this pandemic, where we're all dealing with so many issues and how COVID-19 has impacted all of our lives? Feel free to give us a call at 646-2212, 575-646-2212, or you can join in the conversation on the KRWG Public Media Facebook page, where somebody did make a comment from our social media desk. They say they've heard that physical health, particularly sleep and nutrition, can affect mental health and mood. Can you share some thoughts on this?
The research on sleep seems much stronger to me than the research on nutrition. Nutrition definitely helps cardiovascular health, and if cardiovascular health is better, then maybe physical health is better, and physical health better, your mental health. But it's not as tight of a as an association, and but it could be that there's just not been enough research on it, or we just haven't found the right diet that really is strongly associated with better mental health. Sleep is a whole other story. The better you sleep, the better you feel. People are always trying to find ways to cut down on sleep so they are more productive. It is impossible, and nobody believes it, but it has been proven over and over and over again. If you are short on sleep, every part of your life is affected. There's a lot of research that shows, you know, being sleep deprived is just the same as driving drunk. But it doesn't feel the same to the person. They don't have a bunch of, and it doesn't look the same when you're looking at your neighbor that if you're having a conversation and they're drunk, well, it's completely obvious. If they're sleep deprived, they just seem a little tired. So it's kind of like a secret problem. It's a silent problem. So people always, the vast majority of people vastly underestimate how much sleep affects their mental health and their productivity at work.
What are some things we do that really prevent us from getting good quality sleep?
Probably the biggest, everybody knows what I'm going to say. The biggest culprit is screens, TV, social media, staying up all night watching Netflix, staying up all night looking at Facebook. And it's interesting because, this medical profession in general has been kind of negative towards anything like that because of those types of reasons, especially those of us who deal with children. But then, of course, the flip side is the effect of this social isolation is probably not going to be as bad as it would have if video conferencing and video calls weren't as prevalent now as they are. So nothing's ever all bad. Nothing's ever all bad. But the other thing that is the most important for getting sleep is to go to sleep and to wake up at the same time every day. And when you're trying to establish that really good, we call it sleep hygiene, you can't force yourself to go to sleep earlier necessarily, but you can force yourself to get up earlier. So that makes it really difficult because people don't want to do that because it doesn't feel good. And you're tired, and if you stay up late, you're tired in the morning. But if you do it a few days in a row, then you get used to it, and then your sleep will be much more solid. The human brain is not set up to have a different wake time every day. So the closer you can keep it to the same time waking up and going to sleep, the more sleep you're going to get.
Dr. Martin, you mentioned about serving in the U.S. Army's Medical Corps, including a deployment to Iraq. You have some expertise in the psychiatric care of the American soldier and worked at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Obviously, we have a really big military community here in this region. What are some of your concerns with this pandemic and the effect it may have on veterans?
Oh, veterans are probably better prepared for this than anyone. They're used to thinking of the common good. They're trained to that. Even in basic training, one guy screws up, they punish the whole squad, or even the whole company. So they are used to doing things for a common good. They're used to being organized. They're used to following orders. You can't make big changes and have a successful battle plan or any sort of military plan if people aren't following the chain of command and following orders. And so I think a lot of soldiers are probably out there, and airmen probably out there saying, oh, God, these people are complaining. This is just like being deployed, except my internet's really good.
Okay. We have time for just one more call. Carmen, we just have a couple of minutes. Do you have a question for Dr. Sarah Martin?
I just have a thought. I haven't really heard anybody discuss sort of survivor's guilt. When your family's well, you have a nice home,
yeah.
You have plenty of food, you're employed and you're actually getting paid.
Yeah. You mentioned that.
I was in the military, so I know about survivor's guilt. I was in Vietnam. And I'm just sure that there's probably people that are suffering from that, or not suffering, but at least have some.
All right. We got about a minute and a half, Dr. Martin. Thoughts?
I think one of the best things that you can do for this type of survivor's guilt that you just mentioned is finding somewhere to volunteer. There are a lot of places that are open still that are needing volunteers. There's a lot of new programs, but sometimes people can even think of their own projects to do. Everyone knows their own community, so they probably know whose family doesn't live in town, and everyone knows that people live alone, and those are the people that are really going to be suffering the most from the social isolation. I don't have anybody in the house because they've been much, much more isolated than all the rest of us. If you have a family at home, then it's really hard. And then if money is
a way that you can contribute. I mean, there are every charity on the planet is probably panicking that they're not going to have enough money to run their program this year. So that will be it seems easy, give money, but it's so important. They can't pay their employees to do the charity work if people don't donate the money.
All right. Well, thank you for that comment, Carmen. And also, I want to thank you, Dr. Sarah Martin. Thank you so much for joining us. And do you have any information that folks can find out more about the work that you're doing at with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso?
Yes, well, we have a website. We have a lot of new programs going on through the Texas Children's Mental Health Care Consortium. So mm-hmm. You can just Google that, and it'll come up, all the programs we're doing. Primary care providers, we have a new consultation line that you can call in. It's going to be 888-901-CPAN, stands for Child Psychiatry Access Network. And all of that will be on the state's website for the Texas Mental Health Care, Children's Mental Health Care Consortium.
Thank you so much for joining us here on KRWG Las Cruces and KRXG Silver City. Your NPR newscast is coming up next, then Intermezzo.